Tell me again, how were you made, Bishan? Having conceived the earth, the air, and the sky, the All-Seer slept, and from his sigh, the first of my kind were born. Such hunger we had at birth, that we devoured everything in sight until we had begun to consume the All-Seer himself. Swarmed by his own children, he cried for help, and were it not for those who answered his call, we might have eaten God himself. We were sent in penance to this place, to live among its mortal creatures. What sort of thing have I fallen for? A beast that would eat his own maker? Maybe that's why I'm here, a savage thing, to be civilized by your hand. And what do I know of civilization? Welcome to Outside the Panels. I am Poet Air, and joined as always with me are
Chaz
and Jack.
And we are talking about one of my favorite books of the decade, which is probably a crazy thing to say, and that is These Savage Shores. It is a Vault book and a White Noise Studio production. It is written by, of course, Ram V. This is the second book in our Ram V miniseries. It is illustrated by Sumit Kumar, colored by Vittorio Astone, and lettered by Ram's constant partner, Aditya Bidikar. This is a story about monsters, about colonization, and kind of the effect of becoming human again. And I have a lot to say about the book. It's such a journey, and there's so much historical fiction weaved in throughout it that it makes it just a special kind of experience, one that I like to go through over and over again. I've been nuts for this book. I basically forced Chaz to read it and get him into Ram V with, and also kind of Jack too. So I'm talked a lot now. What are your guys' first thoughts on the book?
I really dug it. I agree that it's pretty awesome. It's a pretty awesome examination of cultures clashing, and sort of how through the lens of their monsters fighting. But it's a really cool story with plenty of blood to keep things exciting and plenty of intrigue to really just like heighten the emotional tension. So. I dug this. I'm very glad that you forced it on me, even though I don't think you would have had to. It's so good.
This book is definitely really fluid and has a lot of heavy themes behind the text and images, and it's just a really solid piece of work, for sure.
Yeah, and they did a great job advertising the book. To Vault's credit, they advertise it strictly as a vampire book. So reading it in the context of that first issue, where it's not really a book about vampires, but it is. But it's more about defending your homeland from invaders. And I feel like Ram put a lot of this in himself because he was raised in India, but then moved to England. At a young age, like 18 or 19, and he's about my age now, so he's now a British citizen, and having these two cultures so dominant in the book, I feel like he probably took a lot of his own feelings about both cultures and put it into these words. And the lines I open the book with are with the two lovers, Corey and Bishan. Bishan is the guard to Prince Vikram of Calicut, and he constantly wears a mask, and he has fallen in love with Corey, and he's also an immortal, so he's known her since she was a child, and constantly throughout the book, she is asking him how he was made, because she knows he's immortal, and he gives several different answers, which kind of adds to the poetry and the mystery of the book, and I find that part of the relationship really, really intriguing, and they meet at the Ala tree, which is kind of the symbolism of the power of India. And that's where they have their secret love affair in meetings. And the deterioration of that throughout the story and through the characters is kind of a real big piece of symbolism that I enjoyed. But things kind of kick off when there is a vampire who is caught feeding on a woman in England. And we quickly find out that a lot of Britain is controlled by vampires. And his name, Alain the Vampire, is sent to Calicut, which kind of kicks off the story from what happens from then on.
I really enjoy the metaphor of the British colonizers as vampires, because it really speaks to how they like come to these cultures and these lands and suck them dry of their life force.
Yeah, exactly.
Just kind of take over and turn them. Yeah. Yeah.
Did you guys also think that Elaine got sent away after being attacked by the hunter, and he's got that big old burn scar on his face, that they were kind of like, well, you got caught feeding, but also you're not pretty enough to be a vampire anymore. You gotta get out of here.
Yeah, and I feel like with Count Grano, I feel like they had kind of a relationship. Father Simba also almost felt like lovers.
Yeah, I think a lot of vampire fiction has that sexual element to it, right? There's the penetration of the teeth. There's the sucking of the blood. You know, there's that. I've given life to this person. Now they're part of me or something.
I think all elements of vampires in fiction really speaks to sensuality and romance. It's kind of inescapable in anything that you do regarding vampires.
So yeah, Elaine is caught and sent away to live out, well, part of his immortal lifetime now in Calicut under the watches of Colonel Smith of the East India Trading Company, who is trying to build a new sort of Silk Road through India. He's trying to make as many friends down there as he can, including Prince Vikram, who has recently assumed his throne after his father was killed, right? Killed in the war.
Vikram has recently assumed the throne, and it is the other sultan of Mysore, whose son Tipu, who is the one, like you were saying, is trying to seem to defend India, but also play favors with them.
Right.
And he kind of, through this, brings Tipu and the Sultan kind of get Bishan to fight on Vikram's behalf in this war against the East India Trading Company, which is almost done through extortion because the Sultan knows what Bishan really is.
Yeah, there's definitely a blackmail element to it, but I think we're jumping ahead a little bit. Before we get there, we got to say a lot of this is kicked off. A lot of what happens in this story is kicked off because this vampire who got caught feeding, Elaine, could not resist trying to feed on the people of India as well, and ends up paying the ultimate price for it, which is turned into a headless horseman, which was brutal, right?
It's such a brutal scene, and it's because he sees Corey, who's a dancer, and cannot resist to feed on her when she's bathing. And we don't even, I don't see Bishan in his full form yet. We just see a jump and this headless vampire just torn apart by Bishan. And that is what kicks it off, is that this high royalty vampire that was sent there to hide is dispatched pretty quickly.
Yeah.
And
all I gotta say is you definitely don't want to fuck with a Rakshasa's girlfriend.
And also, it seems like things don't happen in India unless a white guy dies. Then the East India Trading Company is like, whoa, 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 whoa. What happened here?
It was a pretty bold move for them to send this vampire who's like known to go kind of crazy and to a bloodlust. It was pretty ballsy for them to send this guy as like their diplomat. Like, they're like, we're going to get rid of this guy. How are we going to do it? Oh, we're just going to send him to be a diplomat.
Yeah, and I think, you know, and originally Count Grano, who's the leader of these vampires, thinks it's Zachariah Stern, the vampire hunter that's hunting Alain, who burned him, that killed him at first. And it's only through, like, intense investigation that you learn it was actually someone involved with the royalty of India.
But also not even involved with the royalty of India. It was just a man protecting, well, an immortal man protecting his mortal woman. Like, I don't think that there was the political element of it in there that they believe there to be, but I'm saying that that's the advantage that these East India traders, these white English colonizers seize on and say, it's dangerous for us. We need increased presence. You need to admit that you don't have your lands under control and you need more of our guys here. So
yeah, exactly. So it kind of gets them to nudge in more.
Yeah. Which, if kind of thinking back on it, Count Grano he makes arrangements with people with deep pocket ties to East India. So maybe we are supposed to assume that he sent him there in a way to stir the pot this way. That this is kind of ultimately what Garano and the cabal of vampires wants, is deeper ties into India.
I believe that as well, because that's their main goal of getting inside there. And what the East India Trading Company actually did in history, you know, all these battles that were, I mean, Indian forces were decimated by the British. And it's really brought in there and kind of, you know, as you say, stir the pot, gets it easier in the pockets of Mysore, who is the one that is the Sultan of Mysore, and his son Tipu, who are the ones that are basically getting seduced by the British East India Trading Company and the British.
Yeah, which I think the metaphor for that, or the whole, I won't say metaphor, the analogy, I guess, analogy of that tree that you were mentioning earlier where Bishan and Corey meet, is infested with vampires. And we find out that the tree is dying, and all this, like, this swarm of bats emerges from the tree because they can smell the death on it and are there to reap the last remaining benefits. I think that really speaks to the story of these vampires coming in now. So
exactly, and the British itself coming in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A really good, solid.
They're like vultures preying on him in a moment of weakness.
And at the same time, it's kind of, you know, to defend his land, Bishan, when he becomes a beast in these battles, it happens at that same time too. Because with the loss of India's, you know, true power, it's also his loss of humanity again and becoming what he actually is, a god. And just the symbolism of him becoming the beast that he actually is to defend his country and kind of lose his humanity as he struggles through those battles, with Corey really representing his humanity.
Yeah, it's, this book is filled with symbolism like that. It's insane. Like, it feels like the more layers that we peel apart while we're talking about it, the more it feels like there are underneath, even.
Yeah, I agree. And kind of the British's miscalculation of India and how savage they could be, because those vampires, when they are coming in there, have no idea what they're encountering when they encounter Bishan.
True. But he only wins against them by embracing that savagery. Which,
yeah, becoming what he truly is.
I was going to say, it's almost tragic. Like, yeah. Yeah. Very tragic. So, moving a little bit forward in the story, we've now got the intrigue of something has murdered this vampire, ripped its head off, sent it back headless on his horse. We still don't know what it is. We find out later that it's Bishan, of course, in his cool super monster form. But we get the surprise arrival of the hunter Stern? Zachariah Stern. Yeah, he's coming to finish the job against Elaine. But we find out that he arrives too late, right? And through some miscommunications is tossed in jail. because he also takes a shot at, I believe, the kid, right? Vikram?
Yeah, he does take a shot at Vikram, but it hits Corey.
Right. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Because she jumps in front of Vikram.
And then it didn't matter either because Bishan is there to save the day, and we get the first taste of his monster form with that arrow in his palm, right?
Yeah.
He had reached out and saved it at the last moment. And man, that design is so cool. It's got those horns, those big, strong arms. Man, yeah.
He's got like the arms of a gorilla, the body of a werewolf, the horns of a demon, and then these just protruding fangs. And Sumit's design of him is just so like magnificent.
The colors on him too are just phenomenal. The bright red horns against like this bluish sort of gray coat, almost
indigo color. Yeah, coat. Yeah, a real dark blue coat.
Yeah, it's.
Yeah, how I was saying before we started, that he looked like he reminded me a lot of a werewolf. And then looking at the Rakshasa, like, traditional depiction, I can definitely see, like, a mashup between, like, the vampire-werewolf kind of thing and then, like, this traditional Indian monster.
Definitely. And I just love all the, like, we're talking about the layers of it's truly a love story, too, as well. Kind of, you know, the love lost or the love not being the same because of everything that is endured through this between Bishan and Corey, and how him leaving to fight that war, it kind of changes everything, even though his main thing is to keep the promise to Vikram of coming back alive, but he does not come back the same. And when he arrives, you know, other characters in the story are not the same either. And that's where Zachariah Stern really shines in the book for me, because when the vampires invade, Bishan is off fighting the East India Trading Company. And as we said before, he's basically blackmailed into this. And the Sultan of Mysore actually betrays him and never sends in more reinforcements. So it's basically Bishan against the whole British invading army.
Yeah.
And we see him just degrade. We find out he can turn into a dog. He lives mostly as a dog and as his true Rakshasa form more than a human at all during these days at war, while still communicating through these beautiful letters with both Corey and Vikram. And at...
I gotta say, I loved the letters and how a lot of the story is told through letters in a way that allows you to kind of read it like a prose. And that's where Bidikar
really shines, because each person's handwriting is unique and different too. Like everybody's text exposition, like everybody's text panels all have their own unique look and their own style, which makes them all feel like real letters.
Even without the color boxes, you're right that you can tell who's writing just by the type of letters.
Yeah.
Which once again, we'll say he handcrafts all of his lettering, which that's crazy. I can only imagine how time consuming that is.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Stellar work.
He is the letterer of the maybe last couple of years for me. How much he works, like I say every time, is insane. Well, he's making that dough though.
Yeah, that is where Zachariah really shines, I would agree, is that they don't really have, I think, an understanding of the Western vampire scourge, the Western vampire's weaknesses. And thankfully, they're able to sort of bridge the communication gap and rally the defenses while Bishan's away. And I think it's important to mention, too, you said that the Khan, the Sultan, like betrayed Bishan by not sending in reinforcements, but I think he had always known that East India is going to win. He's one of those like wartime kings. He even talks about not being a royalty, but still being the winner, and how that doesn't, where you come from doesn't matter so much as where you are. That he's illiterate, but he's still the full blown Sultan, kind of. Because he's fought and fought and fought and will always fight. Like, he'll take whatever side is going to win. So it looks as though they're mounting this cool big defense, but I think ultimately he's weakened now Vikram's forces, and there's going to be no way that they could even mount their own solo defenses. Like, they would either have to come together, or ultimately this side is so low now that there's no way they can win. Which is kind of also very sad that you would have somebody ready to defend that would just as quickly sell you out is
and, yeah, sad. I agree that it might be his plan the whole time for the whole money worth, because you can, like, you know, getting the British money in his pockets and just making it look like he wanted to battle, because he seems convinced at the start that he is not going to get past this and his son will soon be taking over, who is Tipu, the other prince. So it seemed, you know, with his planned kind of setup, like, I'm going to have this battle, but actually let the British kind of just raid and take more of India and kind of invade Calicut's area and take more of India, as the East India Trading Company was doing.
Right.
Is, yeah, and it's great. I love how Ramvi actually has, like, real East India Trading Company excerpts when it was happening weaved throughout the book, the historical fiction aspect about these real battles that actually took place, and kind of the savagery of this small Indian armies kind of being actually Bishan, kind of just tearing through all of them.
Yeah. Boy, Bishan just standing triumphant in that scene after just destroying the army. And he's the last creature standing.
Yeah, just a heap of bodies.
Man, was so brutal and awesome. Yeah.
Fucking one-man army.
Yeah.
I love the mask.
The mask is one of my favorite parts. The design of the mask is beautiful. I would definitely get that mask and wear it or hang it on my wall. But where Zachariah, as we were saying, they have to turn to Zachariah to basically fight off these vampires, because their protector is off in the war. And that's where that character really kind of gets to shine. He's a cockney, no-nonsense vampire hunter who, I gotta say, is a bit of a badass, because all he has is knowledge of how to fight vampires. And he has the balls to take on a vampire god when they are invading, which is because Count Grano, basically personally, while this East India Trading Company is fighting the war, he personally goes to Calicut to find out what happened to his, basically, Elaine was like a son to him, or, as we said, maybe possible lover. And he shows up at, you know, Vikram's castle, and they're basically, all these Indians have to kind of learn, in one of those great sequences, how to fight vampires from Stern, who was once their prisoner and now leading them into this battle. And I thought that's just a great shining side character moment, where at first he's just a vampire hunter, and his letters also, Aditya letters so well, his letters back home to his brother who then gets tortured by Count Grano, which leads Grano to Calicut, are, you know, so much different than the Indian handwriting. All these little touches and details make this book so special. And just the battle between Stern and Grano, where we basically realize, if you want to call him Dracula, he's not Dracula, but Grano is basically the vampire god. He's the first vampire. He created all these vampires. He's in control of Britain. And we get to see his true form when Zachariah decides to take him on to defend, you know, these Indian people he just met. And his design also is incredible. Like, just what you would see in old Dracula movies when he turned into a monster, but with these massive wings and just a complete unique design that Sumit does. Like, takes old tropes of vampires that when they're like human bats and making it something completely different.
It reminded me a lot of the, kind of not on the comics thing, but if you ever played like the Skyrim expansions, the one with the vampire lords, where you can like turn into a giant vampire with the wings and fly around and shit.
It does remind me of that. And as talking about that, right when they take him out of jail, it's the same moment that Bishan is just completely a beast, destroying all those people, as Chaz was just saying. And at that same moment, as the vampires arrive, as Bichon does that, as they take Zachariah's help, it's when the tree gets destroyed and catches on fire. And just all those things happening at once, like that kind of storytelling is just what draws me to Rambi, because he does it throughout all of his books. And it really, it just flows so well together, as Jack was saying, fluid, of all these analogies all happening at once.
It's like almost like the same story being told between this tree and these vampires and Indian people.
And also Bichon. Yeah. Yeah.
The tree also kind of feels like Corey a little bit in a way, because when we see it's finally tipped over and dead and become something anew, Corey has also changed forever.
That happens she's the one watching the tree burn. But I agree with you. I think it's a huge symbolism. I think it's a symbolism for a lot of things. For India, for the love between Corey and Bichon, for the civilization of India, because they were becoming civilized, you know, and were originally less civilized, and them having to kind of return to their savage roots to defend their shores. And the destruction, I feel like, really kind of, like we say, is an analogy for almost all of those things. It's so many layers in his writing.
Yeah, in the very first few, like, pages, it was revealed pretty quickly where they were, but in just the first few pages, I wasn't sure exactly where they were and didn't realize it was India and thought that maybe they were on, like, a fantasy island.
I mean, it's so beautiful.
So, I don't know, the way that it, like, unraveled all of this historical fiction elements and stuff from a point of fantasy, and then using fantasy to like tell this story of real world kind of events was pretty great.
I agree. It's fantastic, and it is such a, yeah, that first scene, which I read the opening page in the beginning, is such a great introduction to the story. Like it looks like it could be like an ancient world before, like as Jack's saying, before man, like the Garden of Eden almost.
Yeah, that's the feeling you really get in the beginning. And the way they talk about it, they're like, what do they say? It's something about how the nights are full of teeth. The days are long and the nights are full of teeth. I loved that.
And so,
yeah, it really speaks to the vampire. Yeah.
it really does.
Yeah.
Well, it definitely spoke to the vampire there when he heard the night was full of teeth, but I don't think he quite understood it.
No. I also enjoy it. I think it's in that very first part when he shows up, when Elaine first arrives, and he talks about his son allergy. The colonel says, well, you're not want for sun here, so I don't think you picked the best place to come.
I know. Just the whole, you know, he looks, his look is hilarious, Elaine, there. I mean, it's just so sophisticated with that umbrella and sunglasses and just being, you know, sent to his massively sunny, hot land.
Everyone loves the classic vampire with sunglasses and an umbrella and sunscreen. I don't know if there was sunscreen at the time, but I'm sure they had some equivalent for their...
I gotta agree that Garano's vampire form is awesome.
Yeah.
It just is really, really cool. And before he transforms even, when he tosses his, like, top coat off, they almost give the appearance of, like, the wings sort of taking shape. Even like he's transforming even at that moment. And there's a scene later where they place him and they draw these little extras that make it look like he's got these wings just behind him, almost like they're, I don't want to say sheathed, but whatever, the when wings are at rest, you know what I'm talking about, when they're just against their back.
It looks almost like the cape becomes the wings. And I also love that how similar his design is to Bichon, but in a different way. Like the same indigo color tones.
Yeah.
But just with wings. But the same kind of big hairy arms as well. Which made me think a lot in the beginning that maybe if he was true about his brother that he fed on, if they were related. We find out they're not, but just, you know, clearly gods that look similar, these ancient gods that have been, some have been, you know, as Bishan sent to live as mortals, and others becoming mortals to kind of manipulate the world, which would be Count Grano.
Yeah. They definitely could have been two different limbs of the monster family tree. There should be one big common progenitor, right?
I agree.
A progenitor.
Well, there's at least one, like, greater monster lineage in these different lands that seems to have kind of run things behind the scenes. I don't know if they fall under the same umbrella, but...
I feel like they can, or even of the same, you know, maybe they didn't know each other, but of the same breed of those old, you know, ancient gods, like even pagan gods and stuff like that, or what we would call them here in the States, but also, you know, those Indian deities.
Yeah, I think it's, the Rakshaka, I just had it. I believe that the Rakshasa, I believe, is... from Buddhism, or it was from Hinduism. It's from Hindu mythology and was later incorporated into Buddhism.
Yeah, I believe you're correct. And I'm going to read. So Zachariah defends the Indians and does not come out on top because he's basically fighting a vampire god. And we cut away from what's happening there. And while that's happening, we have Bishan making his slow return to Calicut to, you know, to make his promise true to Vikram, who asked him to come alive. And this is when we finally kind of, because throughout the book, he's telling different origins of his life to Corey. It's kind of their playful love banter. And it is Vikram who kind of reveals what he is. And he writes this letter when he's on his journey back home, kind of from Dog and Beast. And Vikram's letter, one of my favorite parts, is this. And it has the statue of where, you know, a statue of Bishan actually is. And he is saying to Bishan in his letters, "When he was still alive, my father told me stories, Bishan. The demon king of the Mlekas, the ever-living beast at the feet of a hunter god. You remember, old Aki had other names for you. Heart eater, life drinker, flesh reaver, Rakasha. The mask is his face," she would say, as if to scare a child. "All who look upon it shall fall to misfortune." Which is kind of this, you know, it's, then we really get to see what he is, but still don't have really an idea of full power and extent until when the battle between him and Grano kicks off in the third act. So he then returns and finds Zachariah's body crucified and already a skeleton. So many months have passed since the events, because they're all kind of happening together, but at different lengths of time. So at this time, Bishan has been gone from Calicut for quite some time. I think it maybe even be a year or more. And when he comes back, he finds out what Grano did to get him, basically to confront him. And what did Grano do? Because Chaz, you were bringing it up earlier.
Grano has turned Corey into a vampire as well.
So he returns.
And it is heartbreaking.
It is heartbreaking. Bishan.
It's a glow up, like, though.
Watching him crumble, knowing that he couldn't save the, like, woman he loved, the mortal woman even, the one that he was willing to watch, like, pass before his eyes, now was immortal, but at what cost?
I mean, I'm not going to lie. I have a big love in my heart for the sexy vampire ladies, so I wasn't too disappointed, but...
Yeah, that's fair.
Sumit's design of her, too, well, is so done so well, because not only is it, like, the love's drained from her she had with Bishan, because she has a much different appearance than the other vampires. She's pale. You know, she has her beautiful brown, like, body... And tones are now completely sucked dry. And I think that's another analogy for just the love being drained out of her and her becoming this creature. The way she even brings Bishan to Grano is kind of as a trade for the health and protection of their homeland.
Yeah. But she does have a pretty good speech, I think, about how she makes a large speech about what it was like when she first turned and about how hard it was. And she was afraid that that's the way that Bichon had felt for his whole life because he's a monster too and everybody knows it. But then she comes to the realization, though, that she was forced to be a monster, but he has always chosen to be a monster. He's been playing at being human, but his choice has always been to be the beast, to still keep that part of him.
Yes, to still let it out, to not fully, fully suppress it. And that is a fantastic scene. You're talking about them in the bedroom before they leave to England.
Yeah. And then even when they're in the carriage and she's talking about how she was made by the choices of monsters, both Bichon for leaving to fight in this war instead of remaining at Vikram's side to defend him, and the other people that he loves in Calicut, and also by Grano because he was there and he chose to do it as a punishment, I guess, against Bichon. The choice of her to be turned is the one part where I don't quite get the turn of the knife for Garana. Like, he could have turned the prince, right? And delivered pretty much the same message. But, it's not really super known, I don't think, that Bichon and Corey are,
lovers. No, it was right. Almost a secret, but I think it was probably discovered by the fact of why Bichon killed Alain.
Yeah, but I'm saying I don't know that Garana would have been able to suss that information.
Yeah, it seemed like that information was still kind of lost. Yeah. Secret. Kind of lost in the ether.
Yeah, so him turning her just into a vampire, unless it was you're going to stay here, and when the first monster man you see shows up, you better send him to England. And she just happened to be oh man, you've picked the right or the wrong person to turn into a vampirus. But that was the only part. I mean, the exposition that we get about it is really good. And the we were just discussing the choice between being forced to become a monster and choosing to become a monster are two different things. I think was a necessary part of dialogue and exposition that we needed, but it just felt like the how we got there. That was the one part where I was I don't know. But yeah, seeing her design and everything really makes it worth it. I'm willing to suspend my criticism of it because we get what we need out of it, but I thought it was an odd choice of character for him to be you're becoming a vampire.
I think it was a pretty amazing transformation, though, just as far as the art style and character design goes, from her being this Indian jungle goddess kind of vibe to being this gothic vampire. But still having the same appearance, but also completely differently stylistically and even her skin tone.
Yes, and definitely her mood. She's kind of her joy is kind of also kind of drained throughout this. She's just a joyous, loving person from the beginning. And then to that, another tree symbolism, you know.
I'm sure she's not dancing at the temple anymore.
No.
Or maybe just knights.
Maybe.
Just dancing knights at the temple, but.
So this leads to the confrontation between Bichon and Grano. And as we kind of said, they're both basically gods of a different nature. And neither one knows each other's power. And so much of the beauty in his and Corey's relationship is there during the battle because she is there while they fight. It is an arranged duel, basically. He even puts them up for the night in a bedroom before they are going to basically have this duel. And it's still him suppressing what he truly is. And in the battle in the beginning, just the part where they start, you know, the battle begins, Rana was really, you know, taking it to Bichon. I would say Bichon is still suppressing so much. And then Corey letting out, like, his true full nature of a beast, I think symbolizes so much of the relationship of her cutting his blood, cutting his arm to have him bleed. Whereas we then find out that every time a drop of his blood hits the ground, another one of him is basically grown.
And I love how she apologizes beforehand. She's like, I'm sorry that now I must ask you to fulfill the promise you made to me. I think that was great. And I gotta say, the whole showdown is astonishing. As the climax of the books, it definitely doesn't fall flat.
It does not. And just, you know, that all-consuming beast being seen and how it is all-consuming.
Until he has eaten all of existence.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, that mob scene where he's trying to get away and there's just dozens of them pouring on him.
Oh, yeah, I love how he's, like, flying away and they're all grabbing him and, like, dragging him down.
Yep, I'm looking at
the scene. I literally just had the book open and was flipping through it. So good.
Yeah.
And then just as soon as it's done, Corey just burning all the other rakshas.
Thankfully, they're very harmed by fire. Because at first I was like, oh, she's just taking out that one vampire, and then we just got to deal with a whole new army of Bichons here. But no, they're all gone, thanks to that.
Great stuff.
Man.
And then after the battle, his return, he no longer wears the mask when he protects Vikram. And he returns, and of course nothing is the same. You know, the Calicut is saved. He's defended, you know, in the end ended up defending his country and his prince. And this kind of the last panel is so startling where, you know, once again, I'm going to put some of his amazing writing in words on here where he's talking to Vikram about Corey and, you know, the change since he's been back. Him saying, immortal things cannot die, this is true. Wounds must heal. Lost limbs will grow once more. A tree will stand here once again. Talking about the Ala tree. Looking out over the sea, but the world around it will have changed. And Corey, does she feel the same way? There is nothing she would like more than to return. She loves this place, maybe more than she loves me. Perhaps it is all the same, symbolizing him in India, you know, are as the same. But then just these ending, but we lost something, Vikram. In the war and the fire and victories gained and in victories gained and stolen time, something slipped from our fingers. Perhaps it was only dust, but it fell to the ground and it was brushed aside by a wayward breeze. Nothing will ever be the same again. And just showing, you know, Corey now hiding in the woods where it is assumed she now lives.
Yeah, I definitely got the assumption that she was living in the woods. But I think that Bichon came back not to keep defending Vikram, but to make a new life with Corey out in the wilds. To move on from the trappings of, like, mortal life now, at least for a while.
You could be right about that. I mean, the symbolism of not wearing the mask anymore. And that's the thing, is we don't really know. I love that so much about Ramvee's writing, is a lot of it is left up to the reader, to what those last panels mean.
Well, the not wearing the mask could be more symbolic of, like, not trying to hide his true nature anymore.
No,
I can see that too.
I think that's true.
And she could be coming out and like living, even though, like, as a vampire, she could be trying to, like, come more into touch with, like, the wild and savage nature of the beast, like that he is.
That they can live together in harmony with monsters. That. Yeah.
I like that.
I like that too.
Yeah. I need a good monster wifey.
But anyhow,
like we all do.
We got some announcements to do, but so let's finish with our final thoughts on this book. This is one of my favorite books of the decade. I think it mixes deities and fictional monsters with this real historical fiction so well. I think the journey Bishan goes on with Corey throughout the book is just, it's heartbreaking, and it's also just so captivating, his journey. And I feel a real connection to the character of Bishan, one of my favorite created fictional characters of the last decade for sure. Ram really made a character I really empathize with and feel for. And the book itself is just, you need to read it. It's unbelievable. And the final thoughts on the books from both of you?
I also love this book. This is definitely one of the best graphic novels that I read this year. And I agree that the character of Bishan was just one of the best overall, I think, that I've encountered also this year. Down to his monstrously cool design when he beast modes out, but just the sort of tragicness of his story, going from having everything and protecting the people he loves to losing those people and losing basically everything only to gain sort of a new life in the end, that's hopefully just as good as it was before these colonizers came to town. And as a story about, what is an allegory for colonization of India by England, it's pretty great to watch the fight take place with their myths, intersped with those true life accounts of how it actually happened. So, yeah, I dug this one a lot.
All I gotta say is to those who are listening, read it. It's a great book. Just read it. And let us know what you think, because I think it's amazing and would love to hear other people's opinions on what we have to say about it in our thoughts and theories in regards to what you see in the book.
And you can get it at many places. I recommend ordering it from your LCS, but you can also get it on Amazon and on Vault's own website. But always try to support your local comic shop first. They can definitely get you a copy. Chaz got me mine. And so now we are going to announce some exciting things. So I'll let Chaz pick let him announce the creator we picked. And then we'll go over the next set. We're going to release it online too when this episode drops. But first, we're going to be doing a New Year's Eve special on a book I'm crazy about, and it's going to continue our White Noise Studio coverage, and we are doing a New Year's Eve special on Coffin Bound with guest host Brian Wickman, the writer of Grit, our first episode, and Johnny Alpha, Graphic Vandalism from Nerds from the Underground, and also from his YouTube channel. And then who did you pick for your choice for second creator?
So our next sort of creator-focused spotlight, the guy that I chose is one of my favorites, and I think one of yours as well, but it's Ed Brubaker. So we're going to be covering all sorts of different works by the man that does noir so good. We're doing Catwoman to cover some of his DC work, as well as – well, and also I love Darwin Cook, so I had to get Catwoman in there, as well as Gotham Central, which I think is one of the best Batman books of the last – 20 years easily. We're also going to cover his Captain America run to get a little bit of his Marvel stuff in there. And then we'll be talking about Criminal, Pulp, and some of the indie stuff that he does so good with Sean Phillips as well. So I'm really excited to get real gritty and dark and noir-y with y'all while we talk about Ed Brubaker.
Me too, and he's definitely one of my favorite writers as well. And then during that, our publisher spotlight will be White Noise's Vault Books. So the first one we will be covering Fearscape by Ryan O'Sullivan and Andrea Muti, which is a crazy book that I can't wait for us all to read and talk about. We will be covering Friendo by Alex Pacnadel and Martin Simmons. And we will be covering Deep Roots, a Dan Waters book also. And that one will also have special guest Johnny Alpha, Graphic Vandalism, on it. And we're going to put the list of the order they'll be released in out online the day this episode drops. we're real excited for this. I'm really excited for that New Year's Eve episode and to kind of hear Brian go crazy about Coffin Bound. Like, I'm going to go crazy about Coffin Bound. And I'm really excited for Jack to read it and for you to finish it. So anyhow,
really excited for all this awesome shit we got coming up.
I'm already thinking about who the third pick will be. Jack, you could think, if you could think of a creator you want to cover first, we'll get into that. But every...
Yeah, I might need you to... I might need you boys to send me some suggestions to look into. I'm not quite as deep into the comic rabbit hole.
We'll figure something out, too. We could do, like, Jack Spotlight episodes, too. And I think that's a good idea. And then I'm excited to even think about what my next miniseries choice will be. But anyhow, we are outside the panels. You can find us on Twitter at outside the, but with a zero instead of an O. We are on Apple Podcasts, on iTunes. We are on Spotify. We are on Amazon Music. We are also on iHeartRadio. And we are in the process of getting on Stitcher. And we are on SoundCloud. So please write, review, and subscribe. You can find me on social media at PoetAir33. And where can they find you guys?
You can find me on most social media at Chaz Simons.
And you can find me on Twitter at Sin_aesthetics with an X. Or on Instagram as Sin_aesthetic.
Thank you all for listening. This is a beautiful book, and it was great to talk about it. And thank you to the creative team that made this book a reality. Everyone out there, be good to each other. Be well.
Stay safe and wash your hands.
Stay and definitely happy, happy holidays. I know they're coming up.
Yeah, happy holidays as well.
Happy holidays.
Thank you for being an outsider with us. And have a great end of your day. Thanks for listening.